White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 340.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
This is the AU Wishbone, continued off-season coverage.
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we are back. We had about a 3-week layoff. We've had various things going on. We've been doing I did a couple other shows on my podcast nights, and I got sick for a week, which kind of messed things up, first time in a while. But here we are. We had to get back together and do a show. We got a few things to touch on tonight. It's a busy time around here. I'll mention this up front rather than later on in the what we're doing little segment, because this is kind of cool. I just want to mention, in case anybody is listening in the St. Louis area, I got a big thing tomorrow night, Tuesday night, May 8th. I'm going to be hosting this event for Left Bank Books in St. Louis, the big independent bookstore there, in association with Archon, St. Louis's sci-fi convention, and the St. Louis Public Libraries, which, by the way, are the voted second best public library system in the country. I thought that was pretty cool. We're having Charles Soule from Marvel Comics, and he's got a new book out from HarperCollins called The Oracle Year, which I have read, and it's pretty cool. So we're going to be having just a sit-down conversation. He's going to talk about that, and I'm going to ask him about it, and I'll throw a couple of things in about my books, and we'll be signing books and selling books there and everything. It should be a fun deal. So if you're in the St. Louis area, we have a few listeners up in this area, come by the St. Louis Public Library, Tuesday night, 7 o'clock. That's the Schlafly branch. They got a bunch of branches, and it should be a fun time. Now, what is new with you? We haven't talked in a while.
We're in the doldrums of the off season, Van. So, not a whole lot new with me. Just enjoying this time away from football, and it's like for the rest of us, I'm sure it's in the back of my brain. I'm thinking about it. You know, see some recruiting news comes out, or there's an injury update about Auburn players or something else. I'm always kind of thinking about it in the back of my mind about what's going on with it. So,
well, the folks out there know that you and I are utterly obsessed with Auburn and SEC and college football. But what do you, because you know that for a while, my other big thing was soccer. I guess when the U.S. didn't make the World Cup, I kind of my interest in and Italy either. My two favorite teams didn't make the World Cup, so I barely even, usually every 4 years about this time right now, I'm really excited because it's almost time for the World Cup. And we're still going to do a preview show and stuff. I'm not sure if you're planning on doing it. You're certainly welcome if you want to. There are some other people who want to get on.
I don't know how much I can contribute, so.
Okay, well, we'll see. But we'll do some, along the way. I was going to do almost a whole Men in Blazers style extravaganza with it, but we'll still do a couple of shows talking about what's going on at the World Cup. But I've kind of, soccered out a little bit just because of disappointment and everything. So, as you well know, I've gotten really into IndyCar and Formula One. So I'm just wondering what other sport type thing fills your time when there's no college football going on?
Good question. I play fantasy baseball. I'm a Braves fan, so a little bit of baseball. I don't watch entire baseball games much anymore. I mean, back in the day, I watched hundreds of baseball games, but I barely watch it. But I follow them. pay attention to what's going on. Beyond that, honestly, at this time of year, like I, you know, do a bunch of work in the yard and I read books and I play video games. I'd rather like go back and watch, you know, a college football game from last year than some other sport thing that's going on right now, pretty much.
I hear you.
I have the Penn State Washington Fiesta Bowl still saved in my DVR. I'm going to watch it in the next couple of weeks just to start watching Washington to get an idea about them. So
I like it. I actually went back and I don't think people that are not like you and I think most of our listeners are pretty much like you and me on some of these things, if not everything, they wouldn't understand the idea that we would rather watch a recorded rerun of an old football game than a live current sporting event. But I totally get it. I watched, I've gone back and watched the Auburn-Georgia first game a couple of weeks ago, and I want to watch the Auburn-Missouri game since I was at that game, and so I never actually watched the TV coverage of the whole game. So I'd like to go back and watch that. I've got it on my DVR. I just never did watch it. It was such a blowout, you know, that I just never felt the imperative need to spend time analyzing it or anything. By the way, that's also the game where Stidham apparently got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Played the whole rest of the season with that injury, which is interesting. And by the way, that raises an interesting point that we tend to jump on these players and these coaches when they are not improving or when whatever, you know, they don't seem like they're doing what they should. And it just highlights how we don't always know what's going on behind the scenes, do we?
No. And injury information is the most carefully guarded information. Like, they would give you the game plan 10 times out of 10 before they'd tell you about injuries.
Right. Yeah, I can just see people jumping all over Stidham, you know, if he didn't quite live up to things. And then you find out later, oh, he was hurt the entire season, you know, and just playing through it. So don't you feel dumb now, people, huh? But
well, and if he was playing hurt the whole season, I look forward to healthy Jarrett Stidham.
Yes. I just wish we had a couple of those more receivers out there. Dang it. That's just we can't have, as you always say, we can't have nice things, you know? It's like we finally get a nice blender to make daiquiris and the ice maker goes out. You know, it's just that's how our I don't know why that's the analogy I went with, but I did, and there you go. It's just that we get one thing, we lose another. We can't have everything.
I'm not sure that's the analogy most people would have gone with there. But,
but it makes the point, though, right? I mean, it's like.
I get it. I hear you. I'm there.
Oh, geez.
Weather's warming up. I could use a nice frozen drink or
something. I see. That's probably why I thought of it. But yeah, I was going to say, talking about the other sports, though, last thing, real quick, is I tell you, I think the thing I like about watching racing, watching Indy and Formula One, is that the highs are never anywhere near as high as like when Auburn wins something big. Of course not. I mean, you know, if you say, are you as excited when Max Verstappen wins a race? No, of course not. Not even on a, you know, on a scale of 1 to 100, Auburn winning a big SEC game is 100. And my favorite driver winning a race is a 1 compared to that. But yet the lows are never anywhere near as low, right? I mean, in the Azerbaijan race last weekend, my two favorite drivers, the two Red Bull guys, were like both in the top 5, and with like 10 laps to go, they ran into each other and took each other out of the race. And I'm, you know, for 5 minutes, I'm like, well, dang it. And then I just go on about my business. I'm not just miserable for 3 years like when we lost to Florida State in the Rose Bowl. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
So, yeah, well. All right, well, let's get on to business here. Our primary thing tonight, I mean, we've probably got some listener questions, I'm betting, a few. And we'll do whatever else. In fact, I had the agenda you sent me open, and I don't know what I did with it.
I got it. I can run with it when you're ready.
Well, so do you want to go ahead and get into our three questions thing? Or is there something you want to get into first?
We can do that first. This is actually Van's idea. I'm going to give you full credit for this. This is a really good idea for a show. We are going to ask each other three big questions. And we don't know what they are ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And we have to answer them about, you know, it's about football, but and kind of stuff.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
All right. Is that working for you? Did you hear anything just then?
I didn't hear it.
Ah, dang it. Dang it. I go to all this trouble to come up with new sound effects and you can't hear them. It's not fair. It was Prime Minister questions time. It was a guy saying questions for the Prime Minister.
So I was going to say the internet is protecting me.
Oh God, dang you, internet. So, I have another one.
Stop! Who would cross the bridge of death must answer me these questions, thee, ere the other side he see.
Ask me the questions, bridge keeper. I am not...
All right, so that was from Monty Python. He who wants to cross the bridge must answer these questions three. Ask me the bridge... ask me the questions, bridge keeper. I'm not afraid. So...
I can't believe you played that at the end. I was going to ask you, like, what's your favorite color?
And then you'd say wrong.
The airspeed of a laden swallow.
Oh, no. Well, fortunately, I just watched that. That was Amy's suggestion. I thought of the Prime Minister question time, and then she says the Monty Python thing. And I haven't seen that movie since, like, high school, so I didn't even remember anything about it. I got to watch the Monty Python movies again. I've got the TV shows. I got to watch the movies. Okay, let's get on into it then. Who's going first?
You can. I'll go first. Ask you first. You ready?
Fire it up.
With a returning quarterback and questions at running back, it seems that Auburn might go to more of a passing oriented offense. And you have not been a fan of the drop back style of passing offense. Does this concern you? And if so, why or why not?
I don't have facts to back this up.
I was just playing that I don't have facts to back this up bit. I feel like given our current offensive coordinator, given our current quarterback, given at least some of our receivers that are currently functional, I'm not as down on us being more of a passing team as I would under other circumstances. I mean, because I feel like if that's what we have to do, then we're at least prepared and capable of doing it. You know what I mean? So, this year and last year is a lot like 1985 to 1986. Remember, in 1985, we had Bo Jackson and we just had the I formation. We hardly ever threw the ball and we just ran Bo left, right, and up the middle. And that's kind of like what we've done with our running backs the last few years. And now we're doing the deal where we went to Jeff Berger throwing the ball to all those receivers and still trying to have a running game at the same time. So, in fact, without a Brent Fullwood this year, I would say that this year's team is much more like the 87 team where you had an experience. In fact, yeah, Jeff Berger in 87, that was his second year as a starter. Just like this will be Stidham's second year as a starter. He had a good set of receivers like Stidham should have, at least, you know, other than injury, have a good set of receivers. And then we kind of had backfield by committee in 87 because we had James Joseph, we had Stacy Danley, we had a couple of other guys. But, you know, and I mean, Danley kind of became the every down back, really because Joseph hurt his knee back when he was a freshman, but and wasn't an every down back, more or less. But by 87, we had become running back by committee and Berger throwing the ball every other play, which was a lot, you know, for 87, for the 1980s Auburn. And that's kind of how I feel this year. And I'll just say it wouldn't be my first choice to go into kind of a drop back passing game. And hopefully they'll do some creative things so that it doesn't have to always be that. But I'm not as down on it as I would be under other circumstances, if you know what I mean. Oh, and by the way, a corollary on that, if I might, we've talked about who the running back's going to be, but in fact, I'll roll this into my first question. So did my answer make sense at all?
Yeah, okay. I get it.
Okay, so. I'm just making a note here. So my question, and I'll play off of yours a little bit on this. My first question is, who will be the running back? Because I mean, I know that's a very obvious question, and you're not going to have the answer any more than anybody else will. But I think it's a question that has to be asked because that's one of the burning questions going into the fall practice, and probably into the first three or four games. is who will be the running back, because you know there will be a running back. And so kind of, like I said, a corollary off of that, what will it do to the team if we end up going into the season with a bunch of B-backs but no A-backs, so to speak? Does Gus depend too much on one key running back, a la Kerryon Johnson or Trey Mason? And then the thing I thought of just now is, who will be the wildcat back there that Kerryon was? So kind of run with that, the running back situation, including wildcat, John.
Okay. I think the running back situation is an interesting struggle of two opposing forces that Gus Malzahn believes in and the staff. Okay.
I like it.
And they believe in experienced players and experienced players handling the ball. And they believe that they have to play running backs who can pass protect. And Cam Martin is the answer to the experienced running back question.
Yeah.
And he is the leader, you know, coming out of spring practice.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a little guy, and he may be better at pass blocking, but I don't think he's ever going to be good at pass blocking because he's just not big enough.
Mm-mm.
So it's these two opposing,
yeah,
you know, beliefs that Malzahn and the staff have about what makes a good running back that kind of combine. And one of them pushes Cam Martin to the top, and the other one, I think, is going to push somebody else to the top.
Well, let me roll into that mixture then. Did you notice that for the first time that I've really noticed it, they actually said up front that pass blocking will be a factor in deciding who's the starting running back? I thought it was very interesting on the timing on that, that out of every year, this year would be a year. It almost sounded like they're paving the way for it not to be Cam Martin.
Yes, maybe. But I think it's also like when you have a quarterback like Stidham and the potential offense that he brings to Auburn, like we would be foolish to put a running back there who would get him hurt.
That's true.
And if, you know, like in, if the freshman running backs, for example, if they can't handle it or bear it or whoever, then don't put them back there. Because when the other team sees a, you know, a weaker back in the backfield that would have to pick up the blitz, they're going to blitz a guy on that side and make you stop them. So we have to be prepared for that. So that's, I think, you know, Booby Whitlow, Malik Miller, you know, could get a lot of play in downs where we need, you know, the running back to pick up the blitz. You know, there may be downs where we send the running back out and we, you know, we get rid of the blitzer by having five guys out in a pass pattern. But even then, they can blitz another guy and you're going to have to just throw it. And we're going to have to, Stidham's going to have to get rid of it quickly. So in terms of the wildcat piece of it, it's a good question, because the other guy would have said before anything was Stove, Eli Stove, but he's hurt and out, so I don't think that's going to happen. I could see, honestly, I could see Malik Willis being that guy. I could see them bringing him in, and even a situation where like they keep Stidham in the game and, you know, do something dumb and put Stidham out at the far receiver and have Willis run the read option, you know, at quarterback, and then rotate him out. You know, I could see that. And I could see him coming in for Stidham and running the wildcat for a couple of plays in the same way that they would break the quarterback out and have Kerryon run the wildcat. There's no running back that I look at and go, that guy's definitely wildcat material.
Well, let me ask you this then along those lines. The wildcat, as we ran it the last couple of years with Kerryon, is that either A, is that a staple of this offense and you find a new player to plug in, whether it's a square peg in a round hole or not? Or was that just a thing because you had Kerryon, so you create that play basically for him, and when he leaves, you just don't use that anymore and you come up with some other way to generate offense other than the quarterback, you know, handing off or whatever?
I think it's a staple of the offense in the sense that the read option part of it and, you know, him, there being kind of two runners basically. And they're not going to do that with Stidham. And the big thing was, remember, 2 years ago, we really struggled in the red zone. And the carry-on Wildcat thing was a big thing in the goal line package last year. And it was very effective. I mean, he was really good with it. So I think, that's something that we're getting, whether it's, Malik Willis or whether it's somebody else running the Wildcat, I don't think that we can line up with Stidham and hand the ball off in the red zone and have tremendous success. I think that's an area of concern, honestly. We have to. I'm sure that's one of those things that the coaching staff knows they got to figure out, because that was a huge part of our success last year was carry on down near the goal line.
Absolutely. I agree with you that they could put Malik Willis in and kind of do a Damian Craig – 1994, I guess, 95.
I mean, you put him in there in the goal line, in the red zone, and you have the read option, you have him, and then you could still have him throw it. I mean, he's still a quarterback, so he's actually better than a traditional Wildcat running back because he's a much better passer.
But you can't
run
him
up. Guys run a pass pattern.
But you can't run him up the middle every play, though, like Kerryon could, though.
That's right.
So you've got to make some drastic changes.
But he could do it some.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I want my backup quarterback running up the middle every other time he's in the game. That's the thing I'm concerned about. I mean, I agree you can do some stuff with him, but
him being in the game, if you run the running back up the middle, the threat of him keeping it running to the outside makes it easier for the running back up the middle because they can't all crash the inside. Yeah. They have to defend the perimeter against him keeping it. So
yeah, that's true. That's true. You know who would have made a good Wildcat running back? And I know that it ended up being Ronnie Brown with the Dolphins, but I think Cadillac Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Man, and because if he had kept it and gone for the sideline, remember that was Caddy's big thing, is he'd take off running horizontal to the parallel to the end to the goal line
of scrimmage
to the goal line, and he'd just catch the pylon as he'd go around the end because he was so fast. He could he could beat the DBs to the pylon by running sideways, basically. So that's what you want a Wildcat quarterback to be able to do, is either go up the middle, and he could certainly do that, or turn sideways and beat you to the orange pylon. So, man, that would have been interesting. Okay.
Are you ready for number two?
Number two. Wait, hold on. Let me do my...
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
All right, go ahead. Number two.
All right. Is the SEC West easier or harder to win with the coaching changes in that division in the last 2 years?
I refer the honorable gentleman to the answer I gave some moments ago. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. That was not the answer to that question. That was the answer to my actual recording question. I was pointing out that the SEC East is now getting tougher, and that Georgia now has some competition maybe with Mullen over at Florida, and that's much needed. We don't need Georgia having their own division to run roughshod over and be able to focus all their attention on us, since they don't play Alabama regularly. But the West, I mean, I think if you take Dan Mullen out of the West, you haven't made the West stronger. And by the way, Tennessee should be getting stronger too. So we may finally be at a tipping point over the next year or so where the East gets much more difficult, because Tennessee, Florida, and Georgia are traditionally the three big teams in the East. And I expect Tennessee, Florida, and Georgia, all three, to be very good within the next 2 or 3 years. Is that fair?
Yes. I mean, Georgia's there now. And
yeah.
Florida's, should be good and should – be, with Mullen as coach, should soon be very, very good. And
exactly.
I mean, Tennessee's got a long way to go, but,
I think they got nowhere to go but up.
That's right. But, I mean, Muschamp's got South Carolina in a pretty good place. They're competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and Pruitt,
if Tennessee gets back to under Pruitt to decent, But I want to go back to your equation about the West, though.
Yeah, I know. I know. I just want to see that. So, I, like I say, taking Mullen out of the West doesn't make the West stronger. We need to wait and see. You know, we are led to believe that this new coach, that
Moorhead,
yeah, at Mississippi State is very good. And if he's as good as Mullen, then you don't lose anything there. But that's a big ask to be as good as Mullen that quickly. Ole Miss, who knows what's going on there. Arkansas maybe could be on the way up, but they're at the bottom right now. So, I mean, it really is.
You forgot about one.
LSU and Texas A&M?
No, A&M. They lost Kevin Sumlin and got Jimbo.
Yeah, so you got to think there's going to be a transition there. I can't see A&M under Jimbo turn around and being good immediately. They'll be okay. I just feel like the West is in – the West is in flux right now. There's just a lot of uncertainty. LSU seems to be kind of down a little bit. A&M is in turmoil. Ole Miss is kind of in turmoil. Mississippi State is in transition. It really is Auburn and Alabama. And, Arkansas is kind of down. I mean, Auburn and Alabama, there's a reason that Auburn and Alabama are the two highest-ranked teams in the West, because stability as much as anything, don't you think?
Yes. And I think, the West honestly got tougher probably with the coaching changes, just because I think Orgeron from Les Miles had gotten kind of predictable. Bielema was entertaining in some ways, but I think his style of football was never going to win the West. And I think under the new guy, that was the offensive coordinator at Clemson, it was an SMU, they're going to do more of a wide open spread kind of offense like he had at Clemson. And I think they're much more likely to be dangerous with that than Bielema was with what he was doing. And I think Fisher's a better coach than Kevin Sumlin. So I think in the long run, A&M's going to be better. And Mullen is really, really good. He's going to do well at Florida, like you said. He's going to make them tougher, Georgia. But I really like Joe Moorhead. I like his – he's a really good coach. And they have a returning quarterback and stuff. So I think they're – if you asked me to pick who's going to finish third in the West tomorrow, I'd say them over LSU or A&M. You're right about Ole Miss. I mean, they hired Luke as the – was the interim coach, and they kept him, but they're heading into the big sanctions, and
he's a fall guy.
Players transferring away and all that.
He's like Mike Shula was at Alabama.
Yeah,
he's there to take the bullet and clear the way for the real next coach. And I just keep thinking, I just think this is just in comedy terms, not in political terms. It's like LSU hiring Orgeron is kind of reminds me of Donald Trump hiring Rudy Giuliani. You know what I mean? It's like it's flashy, it's big, it's unorthodox, it makes news, but you're not sure how much it's actually going to work out in the practical world. And that's kind of what I'm seeing at LSU is he's kind of flashy and, he makes news, but I'm just not sure how that's working out in practical terms. I mean, how long do you think the Orgeron experiment's going to go on before the LSU says, all right, this was all real, this was funny, now let's find a real football coach?
Well, I think he's got like 2 years, and he's got to either beat Alabama or their offense has to be really good.
Yeah.
Because, he hired that offensive coordinator, and then he ran him off.
Yeah.
And so now they're going to Ensminger, who, Auburn fans cringe when you say the word.
Well, but see, here's the thing. We've all learned by now not to just instantly dismiss an assistant coach out of hand like this, because, when they hired, was it Canada was the offensive coordinator?
Yes.
We were scared to death of him, and they ran him off. Well, that's great. But see, now you say, okay, Ensminger, we can all laugh, but that's what they said about Kevin Steele. So you got to be careful who you laugh at. You never know how things are going to play out,
It's true.
Yeah. So interesting. All right. My second question. This is easy.
That was it. Oh, okay.
Okay. Here's my second question. Is Gus Malzahn the best recruiting head coach in Auburn history? Because there's been some talk about that this week on Twitter and stuff. And I weighed in a little bit, and other people weighed in, and I'm curious what you think.
Well, Terry Bowden.
What the hell is
Tuberville was a pretty good recruiter.
Say what?
At the peak.
Say
Tuberville
what?
Was a pretty good recruiter at the peak.
At his height. Yeah.
At his peak.
At his, but his M.O. was always getting the three stars and coaching them up, you know. He was never the guy to bring in the five
stars. I'm going to say yes, Gus. I mean, now, is that a function of him as an individual or his staff or the structure of the program as it is at that moment? I think it's all of those things. But, I mean, the debate is probably between him and Chizik. I think Chizik was a good recruiter and had a really good recruiting staff. But, I mean, Malzahn has had consistent success, too, at this. He's had some really high-rated recruiting classes. So,
well,
I got to give it to him.
I would point out that part of the reason Chizik had good recruiting success was Gus Malzahn.
That's fair.
We also got 3-9 out of that little arrangement. But Pat Dye, though. I mean, Pat Dye had a couple of good recruiting classes early in the 80s, but...
But he had some other years when not so much. But.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right, so... wait a minute, one more thing about it, I'm sorry. The other point I made about it, I want your opinion on this real quick, is I was pointing out that Pat Dye in the 1980s was recruiting at a time that Alabama was down. He was recruiting against Ray Perkins and Bill Curry, you know, for the most part. And LSU was kind of mediocre. Tennessee was kind of mediocre. Georgia was very mediocre in the late 80s. There really wasn't a massive single challenger, whereas Gus is going up against Nick Saban's Alabama, as well as even like Ole Miss and Mississippi State are recruiting pretty well now. You know,
Kirby Smart.
I mean, the competition Gus is going up against is, to me, way stronger than what our previous coaches had to go against in the SEC and 13 other teams, not just nine.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah, Pat Dye recruited against nine other teams, and some of those nine were Vanderbilt and Mississippi State and Ole Miss, you know what I mean, and Kentucky. So Pat Dye wasn't having to recruit against Texas A&M and, you know, Arkansas and South Carolina and Nick Saban and, you know, all this business that Gus has had to go up against. So, anyway. All right.
That's a good point.
Are we to question number three from you to me?
We are.
All right, let me hit the button here.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
All right, go ahead.
All right. This was inspired by the question this week about Auburn playing a two-for-one series against Tulane. So
yes. The
question is, how upset would you, Van Plexico, be if Auburn played a road game at a non-Power 5 school?
Oof.
So this is something that we have made fun of other SEC schools for doing on this program.
We have done this.
So what about it if it was us? And I have an imagined scale of Van outrage here. With the least amount of Van outrage would be a road game at Central Florida, South Florida, Boise State, or a military academy.
Okay.
The worst end of Van outrage, complete nuclear meltdown, would be a road game at UMass, Louisiana Lafayette, or Georgia State.
I'll just throw the Citadel in. Why don't you? How about God?
Well,
oh man. Well, but see, the thing is, there have been SEC teams that did those things.
Well, I know, and it here's the discussion. If you missed it this week, here was the discussion. Next year or the year after, Tulane is coming to Auburn, and Auburn is paying them almost $2 million for that game.
Yeah,
for the visiting fee. Mm-hmm. So, where the calculation is basically, you know, what Auburn's net profit is on a home game minus $2 million for, you know, that kind of thing. And the idea is if Auburn gave Tulane a 2-for-1, where they gave us two home games and we would play one game in New Orleans in their stadium, then maybe they would charge us, you know, $500,000 instead of $2 million. And the idea is, like, we would play a game in New Orleans. Auburn fans would have a weekend in New Orleans. We'd win anyway. It'd be kind of a fun thing. We could do a bunch of recruiting when we're down there. Mm-hmm. So that was the idea of the theoretical session, because there are a limited number of these schools, and the price per game for these kind of games, these onesie, you know, play at you sacrificial lamb kind of games, is going up and up and up. And Auburn can continue to afford it. We have the money. But some schools, lesser SEC schools, cannot. You saw, you know, teams play at UMass and other schools. And it's this thing. It's the money that is driving this conversation. So but that was the background, Pete. But I want to know from how upset would you, Van Plexico, be if we played a road game at a non-Power 5 school?
Well, you make a good point that it depends on a lot depends on the circumstances and the context of it all. And a lot depends on who it is, because there are some that it wouldn't be horrible. And any, like, just from my own perspective, you know, I have never made any secret that I am perfectly happy to throw all my principles about things like this out the window if it means they play close to me, right? Yeah. If Auburn,
here's what it comes down to.
Yeah, if it was SIU, if Auburn played a road game at Carbondale, dude, I would say that's the greatest move our new athletics director ever made. Give him a raise just for that. But if it was at a school exactly like SIU but in Texas, fire him tomorrow, because that's ridiculous. Right. But
if we played at Texas El Paso.
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, that's terrible. But SIU would be great. Absolutely. No, you make a really good point, though, that it's getting much more expensive and it's going to price itself out of the market for a whole lot of teams. And you start to wonder, can schools continue to charge that much if only a few teams can even afford to pay them that? So, I think that the 2-for-1 is not a bad deal. And I mean, we're always looking for new teams to put on the non-conference schedule. So, you know, why not have a couple of non-Power 5? You got to keep your Power 5, too. Like, you're still going to play Cal, or you're still going to play Oregon or whatever. You just, this would be in the same spot that, like, a Southern Miss, you know, or Louisiana Monroe or something would be, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, well, then I'd be all right with that. I wouldn't want to I don't think a 1-1 would work, and I certainly don't want to just go there. That'd be the end of the program.
No, but, I mean, would, like, again, Central Florida's to the point where I'm pretty close to do a 1-1 with them. But
yeah.
Even like,
yeah,
you know, like South Florida, if we could get them to do a 2-for-1, I don't think they would do it, but that'd be great.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to play them on just a regular down.
No, you're taking about another tough game.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's different when you're trying to look around and pick, like, who's the bad team. Like, East Carolina is the bad team in the AAC right now. That's the team you want to get.
Yeah, but of course, when we get them, they immediately become a national championship contender, because that's what always happens. You know, we put Southern Miss on the schedule. They were 0-12 a couple of years ago. I'm sure they'll be 11-1 when they play us, you know, or whatever, or, you know, something like that. So it just always seems to work out that way. But no, I think that I would be okay, because, like you say, I mean, it's just to be too much money for a one and done.
Yeah, but it would be interesting when that day comes.
Yeah, it will. And I've got in my back pocket a list of teams at all levels that I wish Auburn would play. So, whether it be on the road, at home, 2-for-1, or like neutral site, even, you know. So, but hey. Well, you and I still have to have our conversation. I got sick and messed up our planned conversation about our fall broadcasting trip. But I don't know that it was ever going to be Washington and Atlanta anyway, with other circumstances going on. But you got to help me out, John, because I'm seriously starting to question: do I even want to go to that game? I mean, I know that's anathema.
We have a listener question about that.
All right, well, we'll get to that then. All right, we have, I think, one question left, right, from our three questions?
Yes.
All right, here's my last question. I touched on this a minute ago. Probably is why it was on the back of my mind. Without Kevin Steele, who would be Auburn's head coach right now?
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And, I mean, obviously the answer is vague, but my point comes across, right?
Yes, that he saved Gus's job.
I think he absolutely saved Gus's job. I don't think there's any question about it.
But it's interesting. Let's do the scenario.
Okay.
Would he have gotten fired last year or the year before?
As recently as possible. I think they would always have given him like one more year.
So we'll say last year.
Yeah, after last year. We wouldn't have beaten Alabama or Georgia last year, and the defense wouldn't be what it is, let's just say. I mean, you know, we might have hired some other defensive coordinator and might still have a great defense. I don't know. But I'm just saying, without the Kevin Steele defense, with a mediocre defense like we had, you know, on and off before him, I think Gus gets fired after 2017.
So I'm trying to do the math. So after 2017 or 2018?
2017.
Yeah, that's right. It's 2018 now. Duh. Yeah. So who were the big coaching hires last offseason? We would not have hired Jimbo.
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. And he'd have gone to A&M over Auburn, I think, just because
the money.
Money and less, well, the not money. Going to get Saban and all that, so yeah.
Who else was a big time? So
was the Texas coach already over in Texas at that point?
Herman, no, but that was his only job. He was going to leave Tom. I mean, and LSU pushed in all the chips on him last year and couldn't get him. That's why they hired Orgeron.
Yeah.
So he was not available. We're not going to get Willie Taggart. He's only going to leave Oregon for Florida State.
I mean, this was the thing we were talking about when we were talking about at the beginning of last season when we were worried they were going to fire Gus.
Yes, who is it going to be? So we're in a category where we're competing with, you know, the Arkansas and Mississippi State for the guys they hired.
Yeah.
We were not going to hire Mullen. I don't think that was going to happen.
So, it could have been somebody like Moorhead. It could have been, I don't even know. It's just depressing to think about. I didn't mean to make this a negative exercise.
But you made your point with the question,
though. Yeah. So, but I mean, do you think that Gus would have been fired one of the last 2 years if instead of Kevin Steele we'd gotten like a Ted Roof or something?
We'd have had to score a lot more points.
Yeah.
And he would have been, his seat would be really hot now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. He might have made it through 17. I don't know though. I mean, as bad as it was, even just losing to Clemson and everything. All right. One other topic I wanted to ask you about very quickly was Central Florida still claiming to be national champions. And I asked the question on Twitter. I mean, everybody says how ridiculous that is. And I'm not saying it's not ridiculous. I'm not arguing anything. I'm just asking the question, is it more ridiculous that Central Florida was national champions last year, according to them, than that BYU actually was national champions in 1984 when you had Washington and Oklahoma and Miami that were, well, Miami had lost a couple of games, but were still really good and beat Oklahoma. But you had Washington and Oklahoma and others, and BYU goes undefeated out in the Big West or whatever and beats like a 6-5 Michigan in the Holiday Bowl and are national champions. To me, beating a 6-5 Michigan in the Holiday Bowl is not as impressive as what Central Florida did beating us.
It's fair. It was a different time, and I think I don't remember what everybody else's record was, but it was that kind of thing was very different back then.
Oklahoma had lost to Miami and had one loss. They played in the Orange Bowl against Washington, who was undefeated. And Washington lost to Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl. So they each had one loss. And BYU was undefeated, so BYU was given the AP.
Yeah, but it's back then. It was like, oh, they didn't lose. They must be the best. So, yeah. I mean, everybody's brain wasn't as sophisticated thinking about this stuff.
I guess not. All right. I just wanted to throw that out there. Let me thank the patrons on Patreon right quick. I need to do this particularly not only because I always try to thank our patrons, but also because we've lost a few patrons over our winter break, and I expected that. I figured that folks would get on. You know, we haven't had very many shows, and people are kind of stashing their money away and everything. Hopefully they'll come back. We'd appreciate it if they come back, but we understand if you have other things you need to spend your money on, so we just need to recruit new patrons, because John and I are trying to get to a game this fall to do a live broadcast, and if that Patreon total falls below 200, then we might not be able to do it. That was the number I said, is that's the when we get over that, we can do it, and it'll just be much more difficult in addition to paying all of our regular bills here at the show. So please consider joining in for as little as $1 a month and helping keep us above that 200 level so we can do that live show this fall. Our current patrons are Joseph Fine, Christopher Burleson, and Samuel Salvatore. And then we have Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Justin Bean, Chris Usher, Neil Dyer, David Evers, Tom Anderson, Timothy, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Steve Harlan, Andrew Barber, Jared Albrecht, Rich Reimer, Bill Matthews, Will Summerford, John McCune, Catherine England, and Ann Kanjian. And we have David Simpson, Josh Teal, Mike Finley, Randall Walker, C.T. Wayne, Earl Ricks, Dave Powell, Michael Kirshner, Mick Vijakana, Matt Robbenheimer, and Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, George Gaston, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Clay Henson, and then J.W. Rice, Ward Amway, Dave Medinas, Mark Squire, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Russell Milling, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Brant Rumble, Nicholas Craig, Patrick Williams, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, and our one-time and anonymous donors. And again, as I always say, if I left anybody off, just let me know. It was never intentional. And John's working on some new activities. By the way, one new activity we have, John, is we have a fantasy Formula One league. So if you are interested in, if you are one of our patrons or you want to become a patron and join our Fantasy Formula One League, just drop me a message on Twitter or on email or on Facebook, wherever, all the ways to get us, and at Van Allen Plexico, and we'll see about hooking you up, getting you a team. It's really fun. You pick five drivers and one team, and you get points for various things every week, and the Formula One website calculates it all up for you. It's a lot different than we used to do our old fantasy football. We had to get the newspaper on Monday morning and sit down with a pencil and a calculator, isn't it?
It is. It's a new world. We played fantasy football in the dark ages of fantasy football pre-internet, and we did the calculations by math and then hung them up on the wall in my apartment in Auburn so people know the standing. So
it was so much more fun that way, too, man. That was just awesome. It's just not the same when everything's electronic, although with the Formula One thing, I'm glad to have computer assistance for that. But with football, it was just a lot of fun, you know, getting to go pore over the USA Today statistics every week and all that. That was just awesome. I really enjoyed that, so...
I have a picture that I was in the Army for training after I graduated, and we're out in the field, and we've been out in the field for a couple of days, and we're all exhausted, and everybody else is asleep or just laying out in the middle of a field waiting to go do something, and I'm reading the USA Today sports page looking at the box score. So
I love it. That's awesome. That's us, man. All right. Do we have any listener questions before we wrap up tonight?
We do.
All right, let me hit the button here. You can't even hear it, can you?
It's time for listener questions.
Dun, dun, dun.
On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right, fire them up. What have we got?
All right, first question is the one I referenced earlier. This one's from Auburn Elvis.
Mm-hmm. Da-da-da, all right, you can't hear it, so I'm not even going to do it.
All right. He says that every week Washington keeps going up everyone's rankings. By the time Labor Day arrives, the Huskies will probably be picked to win the Pac-12, the World Series, and whichever car race Van is currently following.
That's fair.
Does Auburn have a chance of staying within four touchdowns, what will surely be the second coming of the 1972 Dolphins?
I think we should go ahead and forfeit now is basically what it sounds like. Yeah, I agree. It is. They're really being built up. I mean, that was like the headline of last week's
Audible.
Yeah, the Audible podcast. And I'm just like, oh, come on. Really? It's like whoever we're playing is pegged to win the national championship every year. We was Clemson last year and year before, and that's Washington. I mean, I'm sure Oregon will be back dominant by the time we play them in a couple of years. Good grief. So, yeah, I'm like, I was so depressed after that. I just thought, man, I don't know if I want to miss part of Dragon Con for that. I might just stay at Dragon Con and watch the TV recording later if we win, you know. I'm embarrassed and ashamed to say that, but, you're giving up something you love to go be miserable for 3 hours. You know what I mean?
I mean, again, I think it's a very even matchup. I think they're a really good team. I think we're a really good team, and it's in Atlanta. I think our defense is going to be pretty darn good. And they have a good quarterback, good running backs. They have a lot of talent on defense, too, a lot of speed. And they're really very, very well coached.
Yes.
So I think it's going to be a good game. It's to me, it's like two legitimate top 10 kind of teams. And I think it's going to be, a really, really good game. I don't think that I'm not going to say like Washington is definitively better than us.
Yeah.
Especially at the start of the season. So, yeah. But it'll be an interesting game.
Okay.
All right. Next question goes from George Gaston.
Hey, George.
Who says, the hurry up, no huddle offense was thrilling for many Auburn fans when Gus became head coach. The pace doesn't give defenses time to substitute, so they have to use more base formations that could be exploited. In the early days, Auburn did not go hurry up as much as many of us would have liked. I thought it was because Gus didn't have 11 guys on offense he was comfortable using for sustained drive. It could be that Gus did not want to put too much pressure on his defense. However, even in Gus's fifth season, I think Auburn's fast is a big misnomer.
Yep.
Gus has his own players on offense now. Instead of going with a group of 11, Gus is using player groups that all but give away what our next play will be. The defense is great, or at least good enough, they can hold when an offense struggles for a couple of possessions. So what gives?
This is the great mystery, isn't it? We've been complaining for years that there is no – it's Auburn medium. There's no Auburn fast. There hadn't been,
Auburn medium.
There hadn't been Auburn fast since 2013. It went out with the two-point fake extra point and the onside kick. And all the other cool stuff we did 1 year and quit doing, which still drives me nuts.
A lot of Chizik in that.
Yeah, it was. You hate to say it. Hate to say it, but a lot of that razzle-dazzle stuff, it wasn't Gus. It was Chiz. It's true. I don't know. I mean, that was kind of his thing. And he doesn't. It's like once he became a head coach in the SEC, he decided he had to be an SEC head coach, which is run the ball and go slow.
I mean, I think Central Florida was really effective going fast last year. I think Oklahoma was very effective. And you can speed up and slow down and all that. But I think, we haven't led the SEC in pace in a while.
No.
And so I think it's, we have a experienced quarterback. Maybe he'll give him the reins more and do it more.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of skeptical.
I would love it. But, I have to see it first to believe it. Let's get one more question, and I got to put things up. I got stuff going on here.
Okay. I'm going to give you like very fast questions. Theodore Roosevelt says, we do a World Cup podcast, and who do you think is going to win?
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to do a few episodes of World Cup coverage. Like I said, I'm cheering for Argentina because they're my default team when USA and Italy are not in it. But I think probably Germany. They're just a de facto. Until somebody rises up, it's Germany.
All right, and Jacob Fleming says, why did Jeff Holland go undrafted? And the answer is because I think he was a one-dimensional player. I mean, it's shocking, when he appeared so dominant at times last year, but he really was a pass rusher. He'd gotten better at run defender, but I think he wasn't great at stopping the run, and I think he's not great in coverage, and I think that really hurt him with the NFL team. So.
Should he have come back?
We always say that as a lesson for underclassmen going pro. A lot of those guys were not drafted, and a lot of Auburn guys that came out signed free agent deals with teams. But we hope for the best for them.
Should he have come back?
Clearly, he should have. I mean, he signed a free agent deal with an NFL team, mm-hmm. But he should have come back.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, he's on the Broncos. But yeah, you know, we gotta hope he makes it through training camp.
Okay.
I was stopping because you said.
Oh, okay. That. Yeah. All right. All right. Well, we're gonna wrap up there. We've done a good solid hour, which is more than I thought we probably had material for. So that's cool. All right. So we're gonna get on out of here for this episode. And I guess we've got a couple of guests, or at least we're going to try to get our usual spring, summer guests on. We'll give Brandon a holler and see if he's able to come aboard and see if we can try to track down War Room Eagle again if he's not too busy with his youngins and everything. And we'll try to find a couple more guests. And so we'll have some more stuff going on here. So if you want to jump on the Patreon wagon, just go to Patreon, patreon.com, and you can just search Plexico and it should come right up, or just go to www.plexico.net. All right, John, that's going to do it for this week, and we'll get back together in a couple of weeks and see what's new with Auburn. War Eagle, man.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you, my love? When they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.